This is Earth Files, the award-winning news site with the latest updates in science, environment, and real X-Files. Podcasting in-depth reports beyond the 6 o'clock news by Emmy Award-winning journalist Linda Moulton Howe.
If you could fly near the surface of the sun, there would be a lot of humming and sonic booms. At Stanford University and the University of California, Berkeley, physicists have processed radio signals from the sun and produced audio files. The sun vibrates with a hum that goes up and down every 5 minutes. Stanford scientists call it the singing sun. Stanford University solar physicists also provided several decades of sunspot data to Jim Metzner, producer of radio's Pulse of the Planet. After the radio signal data was processed into audio files and the years were speeded up, it sounds like a heartbeat. Spots on the sun were not seen by humans through telescopes until 1610. 2 years later, in 1612, the great Italian physicist and astronomer Galileo sketched for publication mysterious dark regions that he saw on the sun. Today, 400 years later, we call those dark regions sunspots. Sunspots emerge periodically on the sun's surface with more intense magnetic fields than the rest of the sun. At those spots, which can be much larger than Earth, those strong magnetic anomalies slow down the sun's convection current, which normally stirs hot gas from deep inside the sun up to the surface. At spots where the convection current has slowed or stopped, the sun's surface temperature can drop 2 to 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Cooler temperature means no glowing gas in those spots, which is why their color turns so dark. Sunspots are also the origin of the dramatic flares known as coronal mass ejections. Big flares propel a solar wind of ionized particles or plasmas into the solar system at speeds of 2 million miles an hour or more. Strong magnetic storms can hurt astronauts in space and damage satellites. Solar storms can overwhelm and damage our electric power grids and other electromagnetic equipment on Earth and interfere with airplanes over the poles and transmissions in radio and television. The ionized gases from strong storms on the sun also collide with ionospheric gases in our polar atmospheres, which then glow in beautiful greens, reds, blues, and violets. That's the aurora borealis, or northern lights. The power of the solar wind can be so great the northern lights can equal 1 million megawatts of electricity. Despite 4 centuries of study from old telescopes to modern satellites, solar physicists still do not know the details of how sunspots work or even why there are solar cycles. Each sunspot cycle lasts about 11 years, rising for about 5.5 years from a low number of sunspots and flares, called a minimum, to a peak or maximum of sunspots and flares, and then back down for another 5.5 years to another minimum, completing the 11-year cycle. Right now, at the beginning of 2007, this should be the very bottom or minimum of the current solar cycle, numbered 23. The solar minimum is when the sun should be most calm without sunspots. But in December 2006, between the 5th and the 14th, a large sunspot called 930 unleashed a series of powerful X-class flares, the strongest class of sun storms. X-class flares are 10 times more powerful than M-class flares, and the M's are 10 times more powerful than the C-class flares. Throughout this 23rd solar cycle, there have been surprisingly strong bursts of X-flares. One was so strong in the last solar maximum that it went off the charts, and scientists dubbed it the biggest solar X-ray flare on record, at least X-20. That historic X-20 flare erupted on April 2, 2001. That solar wind roared into space at nearly 5 million miles an hour. The Earth was lucky that day because that coronal mass ejection missed our planet. If it had hit us directly, power grids and satellites would probably have been damaged. Several thousand satellites now revolve around the world providing entertainment, communications, environmental data, military and intelligence monitoring, and much more. All these satellites represent billions of dollars in invaluable data to Earth nations. If this coming solar maximum 24, which should reach its peak between 2010 and 2012, is really strong, some of those satellites could be damaged. Satellite owners are impatient right now for a space weather forecast of what's coming. Will it be intense or mild? Recently, on December 21, 2006, NASA issued a news release entitled, "Scientists Predict Big Solar Cycle." The lead paragraph said, quote, "Solar Cycle 24 looks like it's going to be one of the most intense cycles since record-keeping began almost 400 years ago," unquote. So I called up Dr. David Hathaway, solar physics team leader at NASA Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama, and asked him if Solar Cycle 24 has started yet and why it's expected to be so strong. I was surprised to learn that despite the NASA headline, the sun is giving off mixed signals that are confounding astrophysicists in their predictions.
We haven't seen the official first spot of the new cycle, but we've seen indications that new cycle spots are getting ready to form, and one that looked like there was a spot but appeared while it was on the back side of the sun, the far side of the sun, and by the time it rotated around to our side, the spot had disappeared, but its magnetic remains were still there. So it does look like the new cycle is starting, but we're still waiting to see the first spot that's unquestionably the spot for the new cycle.
And how will you know? What do you look for?
Two things we look for. One is the magnetic polarity. The magnetic polarities of sunspots flip from one cycle to the next and from one hemisphere to the other. And so we should see that the magnetic polarities are flipped north to south and south to north. But we've already seen some of those. The other key ingredient is it needs to be a spot at a fairly high latitude, usually above 25 degrees. Sometimes there are first spots of the new cycle that appear as low as 20 degrees or so. But all of the reverse polarity spots we've seen thus far have been low latitude.
And what do you expect, based on historic data, for how this solar maximum will unfold?
It's a little confusing this time around, actually. We haven't had this problem in the past, but there are a number of indicators that we can look at related to sunspots and solar activity that give us an idea ahead of time of how big the cycle is going to be. And things that have worked and agreed in the past don't agree this time. One thing we look at is geomagnetic activity. This is shaking of the Earth's magnetic field, which is caused by two different things on the sun. One is flaring activity and what we call coronal mass ejections, these huge clouds of material that are blasted off of the sun at more than 1 million miles an hour. As they travel through the solar system and hit the Earth, they actually are stopped by our magnetic field, and it shakes our magnetic field, and we can see that on the ground. We've seen those variations in the Earth's magnetic field for over 150 years now. Another source of that is high-speed wind coming off of the sun. What we found in the past is that the level of that activity 1 or 2 years before the minimum of the cycle is a good indicator of how big the next cycle is going to be. It's as if the sun is already, you know, building up its magnetic fields and starting to let loose early on, and that activity says the next cycle is going to be big. But another thing we look at is how strong the magnetic fields are at the poles of the sun. And this time around, and we've only been able to do that for the last 30 years or so we only have three cycles of that. But those fields have been very weak this time. They're weak now, and that suggests that the next cycle is going to be small. The one new tool we have this time around is that we now have models, much like what meteorologists have for predicting weather on the Earth. We now have models for how the sun does this, how it makes magnetic fields, makes sunspots in the sunspot cycle, and those models are telling us that the next cycle is going to be big. So we've got a bit of a problem this time in trying to sort out why, in particular, the magnetic fields at the poles are saying small, while other things are saying that it's going to be a big cycle. And we need to sort that out as scientists here within the next few months, hopefully, before this cycle gets started, because there are people that really need to know how big this next cycle is going to be.
Because?
Because of its influence on all of our stuff in space. Satellites in space are influenced by solar activity, their orbits, how long they stay up, the ones in low Earth orbit. There's enough of the Earth's upper atmosphere up there that they slowly spiral in, and if we have a big solar cycle, it heats up the Earth's outermost atmosphere and makes it puff up a bit, and so those satellites will deorbit or come down quicker than they would, and so people that have spent millions and even billions of dollars putting those satellites up there are very concerned about how big the next cycle is going to be. The size of the next cycle also influences communications here on the ground, from long-range radio communications to cell phones. Particular cell phone systems that use satellites, our GPS system uses satellites. All of those things are influenced by how big the next cycle is.
Well, in your December 21st NASA article, it said this could be the strongest solar maximum in 400 years of record keeping. If that turns out to be the case, what are the worst things that can happen?
Worst thing that can happen is that we would lose some satellites prematurely. There are problems for astronauts in space. In fact, these flares that occurred a week or two ago were enough to impact the activity by astronauts at the space station.
Mm-hmm.
It can influence airline flights here on the Earth, in particular polar flights that go over the Earth's poles, can be without communications during big events and big cycles, and so they have to take longer routes and more expensive routes to get from Europe to the Americas, for instance.
In a strong solar maximum, if it is so strong, what would you expect to be happening?
We'd see many more flares, more coronal mass ejections. Here on Earth, we'd see more aurora as far as displays of the northern lights that are caused by solar eruptions messing around with the Earth's magnetic field. There could be communications outages. There can even be electrical outages, that these shaking the Earth's magnetic field can cause a surge of electricity through power lines. We had a big outage back in March of 1989 where it took out power to the province of Quebec. Some people were without power for 6 days. It literally fried a transformer in New Jersey that cost $10 million. So there are a number of things like that that can happen during times of extreme solar activity.
Well, what is the largest X-flare that has ever been reported so far?
Largest one happened during this cycle. It basically went off our charts. That we've been measuring the X-rays from the sun in flares using NOAA's weather satellites for about 30 years now. And there was one during this last cycle. Our most energetic class of flares are called X-class flares, and they're usually X1 through 10 or something. And we didn't have a class higher than X. This one, I think, was pegged at an X20 or something like that. So it basically went off the scale, and we need a letter after X, a Y or something like that to describe these, because this was more than 10 times bigger than most X-class flares. Now that we had a flare that was 10 times bigger than the normal X, the best we could do was say, well, it's a 15 or a 20 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It still describes the energy in the flare nonetheless.
Now, do you think that there could possibly be, if your projections are correct, a lot of these X20s between now and 2010 to 12?
I wouldn't say a lot of the X20s, but certainly if it's going to be a big cycle, we will see a lot of X-class flares. That's been our experience in the past, is that as the number of sunspots increase, the number of flares increases as well, and the size of them. Because you get more of them, there are more X's in the mix. But as we saw recently, you can still get X-class flares even when we're down to just one or two sunspots on the sun.
Mm-hmm. And if there were a lot of X-flares in a really intense solar maximum, how often would they occur, do you think?
During an intense solar maximum, you have many X-class flares per month, whereas near minimum, we can go many, many months or even years without an X-class flare. At maximum, there are several per month that we would see.
If there are several per month and we have all of these satellites, then it really does become a critical problem.
Yeah, one big flare, if the situation's right, can destroy electronic elements on satellites. And as I said, just the number of them accumulated over the cycle is enough. The Earth's upper atmosphere puffs out and causes some satellites to slowly spiral in. There will be more satellite outages, and the services that those satellites provide will be interrupted because of it. That's part of why we need to get the prediction better, because what can be done is when you launch the satellite, if you're launching a satellite now, you would launch it into a higher altitude orbit so that it can stay up longer, and you would add more radiation hardening to its components to protect it as well. On the other hand, if it's not going to be a big cycle, then you don't need to spend the millions of dollars involved in doing that, on doing it. As far as the satellite industry is concerned, knowing how big the next cycle is going to be is critical. It costs them money one way or another if the predictions are wrong.
Has there ever been this confusion before about the weak magnetic poles versus your other indicators?
No, and that's why we're in a bit of a quandary now, and many scientists that are actively trying to get to the bottom of it. For the last two cycles, at least, where we've had panels come together to look at the different predictions and different techniques that we've found to be reliable, and two of these are the geomagnetic, what we call precursors, things that come before the cycle, and the polar magnetic fields. Those have agreed fairly well the last two times, but this time they disagree. We need to understand why. The sun's telling us something, and we've got to figure it out.
And how long do you think it's going to be before you really know?
I would say within the next 2 years we will know, and we may know sooner than that. The next cycle has been slow in starting. We haven't seen the official first spot of the new cycle, although we've seen indicators that there may have been new cycle spots on the backside of the sun, but by the time the sun rotated around, the spots had disappeared and left behind their magnetic remains. But once the cycle gets started, how fast it starts rising, how fast it starts making more and more sunspots, is a very good indicator of how big the cycle is going to be. So we should know within 2 or 3 years how big this next cycle is going to be, that ought to reach a maximum in around 2011 timeframe.
Mm-hmm.
We will know for sure, a couple of years before the peak hits, how big it will be.
And if you were betting money, what do you think?
I think it's going to be a big cycle. Two different sort of predictors that I use say it's going to be large, and the dynamo models that we have that reproduce, that show how the sunspot cycle works, one of those is now incorporated data and shown that it's very reliable over the last 8 cycles. That model from the High Altitude Observatory also says that this ought to be a big cycle.
It appears that at least 4 of the biggest solar cycles have all come in the last 50 years. What do you think that means?
It means the sun's been very active, and there have been researchers that have suggested that the sun has been more active now than it has been in thousands of years.
Is there an increase in solar energy that could explain global warming and even heating on Mars?
There is a correlation between solar activity and surface temperature on Earth. I think most scientists agree that there is a connection between the two, but it looks like the sun can only be responsible for a fraction of the warming we're seeing, and can't be. The recent rapid rise in temperature cannot be attributed to solar activity, although the solar activity that, as you said, the biggest ones in record have been the last few, that has contributed some to the global warming problem.
And is it fair then to say that the energy from the sun has been increasing?
The energy output has. When we have active cycles, lots of sunspots, although the sunspots are dark, all the other activity makes the sun brighter. So the sun's brighter during big cycles than it is during small cycles, and brighter at maximum than it is at minimum.
Is there a direct association between brightness and the energy that reaches the Earth and heats?
Yes, there is. But again, the direct heating from the brightness of the sun is only about 0.1%, so it's a small change. The climate modelers, the people that model the Earth's climate, when they add that in there, 0.1% change in brightness over a 10-year period, they have a hard time reproducing the temperature changes that are seen, other than noting that when the sun is periods of activity like we are now, surface temperature seems to be warmer. By 2009, we ought to know how big the peak is going to be in 2011.
Thanks for listening to this Earth Files podcast from the edges of science, environment, and real X-Files. Go to www.earthfiles.com to see more than 1,000 Earth Files reports with photographs, drawings, and documents. And visit Earth Files every day, every week, for new reports and new podcasts. That's www.earthfiles.com.